Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Amud Aleph, but in the new Mishnah, Yotze Dofen, En Yoshvim Alav Yemei Tuma, a cesarean section, a birth that takes place not through the birth canal, does not have the usual din of Leida, not Yemei Tuma, but not Yemei Tahara, Vein Chayvin Alav Kurban. Or in essence, the whole Parshia of Leida that's found in the beginning of Parshat Tazria does not apply to a cesarean section. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Ha'ezeke Yulod. As we're going to see in the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon has a riboy that tells us that that is considered to be like a regular birth. And even though in other areas of halacha, we wouldn't necessarily consider it a birth, in this matter, with regards to Leida of a human being, Rabbi Shimon says that a cesarean section is considered to be a full-fledged Leida. Now obviously this type of procedure in their time was extremely dangerous, and Rashi just notes that there is a possibility of the woman surviving. Rashi says over here, through some sort of medicine, they were able to open up her stomach, and then afterwards she is able to recover from it, because if she's not able to recover from it, the whole din of the Mishnah is moot, because it's all about Tumat Leida and the Korban for the woman who gives birth. If she doesn't survive, then none of that is relevant. So you have to have a scenario where the woman can't survive such a surgery. And Rashi seems to indicate that it was rare, but there were possibilities of a woman surviving. And obviously today, with modern medicine, the entire reality has changed in that a woman who gives birth through a Yotzei Dofen is very likely to survive, and it's not as life-threatening as it was in the time of the Rishonim. Kol Hanashim Mitamot Bebayit Achitzon. This is something that we established earlier in the Masechta. We discussed as part of a difference that is between Nida and other areas of Halacha that deal with Tuma from emissions or from sightings. Shenemar, because the Pasuk says by the Nida, Vishak itiye zava dam ye zova biv sara. And we learn from that as soon as it exits from its bisara, its location internally, it is mitama. That means that a woman, as soon as the dam exits the uterus, she is tumeah tumat nida, does not have to exit her body, it just has to exit the rechem. And so therefore we had many of the halachot that we've already seen previously, that a woman has to then check, because we're not certain that she's seeing the dam when it exits the body, it might have happened beforehand. That's also part of the reason for the retroactive tumah with regards to the eight, because we suspect that there was a release of dam before we actually have the sighting of dam. Haval zav u'balkeri, with regards to other emissions, like a zav and a balkeri, emitamim achet tetzei tumatan l'chutz. They're not tameim until the actual emission exits the body. This is a locha now that we saw back on Daf Yud Gimel. Ayochel b'truma, person was eating truma, v'irgish shinizdazua, e'veirav. He had a sensation that his whole body shook, and therefore he's having a seminal emission. Ochez ba'ama, he grabs onto his member, Ubalea tachuma and swallows the chuma in order to prevent the shechvat zera from exiting the body and making him tamei, so that he can finish up the chuma before he actually becomes tamei. Umitamim bekoshu. All of these emissions are mitamei with the smallest amount. Afilu keina chardau, even like a mustard seed. Upachot mikain, or even less than that. There is no minimum shiur for the emission. The Gemara says, Amar Mani bar Patish, maitamayu dirabonon. What's the reasoning of the Rabbanan's position that you need an actual Leida through the birth canal to be relevant in the Parshia of Perek Yud Bet Parshat Tazria of Leida? Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Isha ki Tazria v'yalda zachar. So the Pasuk presents it that a woman who has conception then gives birth to a zachar. Hachetele b'makom shi mazrat. Until she gives birth through the same way that she became pregnant. That means that just like the conception took place through the entry of the semen through the birth canal, so too the exit of the vlad must come out through that birth canal. Rabbi Shimon, what does he do with that pasuk? Hai afilu lo yalda elik ein shizria imot me'aleda. From there he learns that even if the discharge of a fetus, meaning a miscarriage, comes out, ein shizria, the same way it was conceived, which means in a liquid, dissolved form, imo tmeah leida. The mother is considered to be tmeah leida. That's a Mishnah that we saw back on Daf Chavav. We also saw the Gemara back on Yudchet with regards to this machloke between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. As to a fetus that's discharged, when you have a placenta shilya, there is a blood that comes along with it. So there, the Chachamim and Rabbi Shimon argue about, first of all, if there's tumatamate in the house when you have a shilya there. And number two is the status of the woman. As far as the status of the woman is concerned, they both agree that she is Tmeya.
Now the Chachamim agree she's Tameah because they think the Bayit is Tameh. They think the Bayit's Tameh. They think that whatever was discharged had enough form and shape to it that it makes it, that it has a din like a mate. And therefore there's Tumah Tameh Babayit. And if that's the case, then it also had sufficient form to make the woman Tumah Tameah, Tumat Leida. Bishimon, on the other hand, says that the fetus dissolved and it was overwhelmed by the dam that was discharged by the woman, and therefore there's no more Tumat Tameh because the fetus has been batel to the dam. But as far as the Tumat Leida, the woman is considered, has a status of Tumat Leida because of this pasuk, that even though it came out in a liquid dissolved form, it still has a din of Tumat Leida. Rashi indicates that the Rabbanon don't need a pasuk like that, because according to them, the baby came out in a full form and it was not nimok, it was not dissolved. And therefore, it's for sure that the mother is Tamei Tumat Leida. So Rashi seems to indicate that the Chachamim get their position from the fact that anything that comes out is considered to be a birth because they're mitamei the house after a vlad comes out with a shilya, implying that whatever is discharged by the woman is considered to be a vlad or a leida, and they don't need any specific or particular pasuk for that. On the other hand, the Bali Tosafot back on Daf Yud Chet Amud Aleph argue on Rashi's assumption, says it's a more practical issue, which is that in general, when there is a shilya, when there's a placenta, there's also a vlad, and when the vlad is dissolved or it becomes liquefied, that happens b'bayit achitzon, that happens after it's exited the rechem already, and that's why you don't have to have a specific pasuk to be merabit, because even when the baby comes out in a liquid form, that happened after it was quote unquote born. And therefore, there's already Tumat Leida before it ever turns into this liquefied form. Although the Bali Tosafot do point out that there are instances where it can be Nimok, even inside the Rechem. Tosafot, on the other hand, mentions that there are instances, even according to the Chachamim, where even though the rove of fetuses that exit are not dissolved, there are instances where have a liquid form of discharge. And therefore, the Chachamim would also need this Pasuk for that reason. In the end, Tosafot says, Vish Lamar, the Tartish Maminat, that you can learn both things from it. You can learn both the fact that the vlad has to come out from the Makom Shemezrat, as well as the fact that if it comes out like the Zera, then it still is Mitama, the woman. So now, Mar says, that explains why he doesn't hold like the Chachamim. On the other hand, it doesn't explain to us his position as to why he thinks that a cesarean section is considered to be a Leida. So that's what Mar says, Rabbi Shimon, my time, eh? What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon's position? And Reish Lakish Amakra, Teleid, the Rabot Yotzei Dofen. The extra word of Teleid comes to teach you that even a Yotzei Dofen, even a cesarean section, is considered to be a Leida. And that is because it says, Yishaki Tazriya V'yalda Zachar. And later on, when it comes to Nekeva, it says, Vim Nekeva Teleid, Mitamash Vim Vinirata. The word Teleid there is extraneous because you could have just written in Nekeva. And we would have known that it's speaking or referencing back to the Yalda that was mentioned before. Why does it mention the word teleid again? Rabot Yotzei Dofen. Rabbanan, what do they do with that teleid? Hamibayle le rabot tumtum androgynous. That they use that to include a tumtum androgynous to the dinim of Tumat Leida. The Sakadat Chamina, I would have thought the Pasuk says Zacharu nekeva aktiv, Zachar badai nekeva badai. That means only a absolute Zachar, an absolute nekeva, would be subject to the parshia of Tumat Leida. Lo tumtum androgynous. Mashmalan, teleid, comes to include that. Rabbi Shimon, nafkelei, minitani bar Levi. He learns out tumtum androgynous from the braita, the tani bar Levi. Leben, leben mikol makom, lebat, lebat mikol makom. It says here in Parshat Tazriel, b'lamot yumei tara, the bain, or the vat. So then, it uses, instead of zachar nekeva, it uses the bain or the bat. So it uses the limud from the braita of bar Levi, that tells us the ben means mikol makom. Any form of a son, the bat, any form of a daughter, meaning that we have a more expansive view of what ben and bat is, a more expansive view than zachar nekeva. That would include a tumtum and androgynous. Rabbanan ami baile, the chayav al kol ben buben, or the chayav al kol bat bebat. They need the ben or the bat to teach you that she cannot bring one korban for multiple births. Each birth will require her to bring a separate korban. That teaches you the ben or the bat. For every ben and for every bat, you need to bring a separate korban. Rabbi Shimon nafkalei minatani tana kamei derav sheishet. Rabbi Shimon learns that each individual birth requires a separate korban from the braita that was brought before Rav Sheishet. Zo torat hayoledet. This is the instructions, the process for a yoledet. And from that we learn, Melameh Shemivia Kurban Echad Al Vladot Arbe. From there you see, you do bring one Kurban on multiple Vladot. Yochol Tavia Leida Vel Ziva Kachat. You would think that you would bring a single Kurban for a Leida and for a Zava Gedola, both of which require the woman to bring a Kurban. The Gemara says about that, or interrupts with the Braita and says, I don't really understand. You'll let it to Achala Dam, you'll let it to Achla Chelev, Bechad Kurban Tiskila. You'll let it to a Dam, which is a Chiyuv Karet, and a Beshogeg results in a Kurban Chatat. And you'll let it that ate Chelev, which is also a Chiyuv Karet, and was done Beshogeg is Chayav Chatat. All of a sudden you can bring one Kurban Chatat, that would be sufficient. Why should different violations be sufficient with a single Kurban Chatat? Why would you think that a Leida and a Ziva should have the ability to bring a single Korban? Ella, you have to read the Braita in the following manner. Yochol Tavia LeLeida Shlifnei Melot VeLeida Shlachar Melot Kachat. So you said now that multiple Leidot can result in only bringing one Korban. But that's only true if they take place within the single rubric of a birth. But if you have a one birth that takes place before you completed your 80 days, for a Nekeva, and one birth that takes place after you've completed your 80 days, you would think you could bring one Korban for them. Tamalomar, Zot. Zot is a miut. So Torah is a reboy to say that we include any Leida that took place within the framework of the 80 days that the woman had for her Yimei Leida. I'm not using 40 days for a Zachar because it would be impossible for her after the 7 days of Tuma to become pregnant and then have a miscarriage that would result in a Korban within the next 33 days. You need a minimum of 40 days, and you don't have that. So it's only relevant by Nekeva, where you have 80 days. The woman, after 2 weeks of Tuma, could become pregnant, and then she could miscarry before she's completed the 80 days and be chayevet a Korban for that. But nevertheless, since it's done within that 80 days, she does not need to bring a separate Korban for that miscarriage during the 80 days. That's only true if the miscarriage takes place during the 80 days. On the other hand, if the miscarriage takes place after the 80 days, that's achar melot, after she's finished those 80 days, then it requires a separate korban. So that's the source for Rabbi Shimon, as the fact that each leida requires a separate korban. He learns it out from the word zot, as opposed to the chachamim, who learn it out from the vein or the vat. And the Rabbanan, afagav dichtib zot, itzrich leben levat, even though it has the word zot, which tells you that you have to bring a separate korban, nevertheless, you need the Bein Olabat to teach you. That's only true when it's two pregnancies. If it's one pregnancy, it could go Yehuda v'chizkia b'nei Rabbi Chia, the twin children of Rabbi Chia, Yehuda and Chizkia, Emer b'chad korban sagila. Maybe over there, since it's a single pregnancy of twins, even though the twins were born 3 months apart, which would be over the 80-day limit, then maybe they should still bring one korban, Kamash Malan, that even in that scenario, you would have to bring two korbanot, because they were born close to 90 days apart. One of them was born somewhere in the middle of the 7th month, the other one was born at the end of the 9th month. So there was a gap in their birth that exceeded 80 days. So you would have thought maybe even in that scenario, you still bring a single korban for both of them, because they are one pregnancy. That's the Kamash Malan, that even the Ben Udabat, if they are separated, they're over the limit of the 80 days, then they require a separate korban, even though they're from a single pregnancy. And I saw that someone sent around that the Guinness Book of World Records has a family from Ireland that had the birth of twins, whereby the twins were born something along the lines of 87 days apart. So there is a possibility of such a thing happening. I think it's a lot more practical in a situation where we have modern medicine and you're able to stop contractions and you're able to have one baby born premature and still survive. But nevertheless, it is not an impossibility, and therefore, you had this scenario with Yehuda v'Chizkiah that the Gemara notes, and they have a pasuk to include the fact that you have to bring a separate korban for each one of them. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Omode Rabbi Shimon b'kodoshim, sheino kadosh. Rabbi Shimon agrees that this din is uniquely associated with the birth of a human being because of the riboy of teleid, but when it comes to kodoshim, a cesarean section is a disqualifying event from kodoshim, and therefore it won't be kadosh. My taima, gamar leida, leida mi bechor. Because there's a gzer shava using the word leida from bechor, from the gzer shava of shor o kesef oez, ki yivaleid. And by bechor it says, asher yivaleid. So leida, leida teaches that gzer shava. And by bechor, we have a requirement, mahatam peter rechem. Just like by the bechor, it says that it has to be discharged through the rechem meaning it has to be birthed through the birth canal in order to be kadosh, b'kedushat bechor. Afkan, so too by kodoshim, peterechem, it has to come through the peterechem, through the birth canal, in order for it to be kadosh, in order to be classified as being a korban, that is kadosh. The Gemara, leida, leida me Adam. Why don't you learn out birth from Adam? Like in our parsha, where it's teleid. And so you also have the word leida here. Ma hatam, you'd say dofen. Afkan, you'd say dofen. And then we could learn, just like by human beings, a cesarean section is considered to be a leida. So too by kodoshim, it's considered to be a leida. Where it says, mistavra, mi bechor, have a leida mela. Makes more sense to learn kodoshim from a bechor, shukain, because they have the following common denominators. Imo, mi imo. Because there is a overlap in the fact that the psukim say shivat yamim iye imo, which is by bechor, by kodashim it says vayash shivat yamim tachat imo. You have that additional gezeres shava. Where it says adrabba meadam avilei demelav shekein pashut mi pashut. That it makes more sense to learn out adam, which is any person. It doesn't matter whether you're bechor or not. You have the din of leida and the tumat ara and korban associated with that. And similarly, by kodoshim, it doesn't matter whether you're the firstborn or not, they also have a din in kodoshim. So maybe that would make them more alike, and therefore we should learn from Adam to kodoshim rather than from Bechor. Elami Bechor avalei demelav shekein. So by Bechor, you should have learned it out because it has the following common denominator. Aim, as we just noted, the psukim both use the term imo, beimat kodoshim. They are both kadosh to go on the mizbeach. Pigol, notar, vitameh. Pigol, notar, vitameh are applicable by them because they are kodoshim, and therefore those psulim are relevant by kodoshim and are relevant by bechor, which is not true by adam. So here you have five things. The usage of the term imo, the fact that they're both kodoshim, and then the three psulim over here are pigol, notar, vitameh. Adarabba, meadam, avaleh, meilaf. Makes more sense to learn how kodoshim from adam, shekein, because they have the following common denominators. Pashut. Again, as we explained before, there's no din of bechor that we're discussing here. It applies to all animals and applies to all human beings. Zachar, by the bechor, the din only applies to male animals, whereas by human beings and by kodoshim, it applies even to female animals. Kadosh, with regards to a bechor, it's kadosh mirechem, as opposed to kodoshim and human beings, which are not necessarily kadosh. Bematana, and the bechor is a matana, one of the matnot kuna, which is not true by Adam, which is also not true necessarily by Kodashim, because you have certain Kodashim that are eaten by the Balim, and that the Kohen doesn't get any portion of them. So those are four things that overlap between Adam and Kodashim. The Gemara says, Hanach Nefishan. The ones from Bechor to Kodashim, which are five, are more numerous than the common denominators between Kodashim and a human being, which are only four. Therefore, Rabbi Shimon, who believes over here by human being that teleid includes the possibility of a cesarean section being a full-fledged leida and being subject to the din of tumat ara and korban, he only says that by human beings, as opposed to by kodoshim, where he compares it to bechor, just like a bechor requires peter rechem, so too by kodoshim, unless it's peter the rechem, poter the rechem, it would not be qualified to be a behemat kodoshim. So, Amar Rav Chiya Bereid Rav Huna Mishmei Drava. Tanya, the Misael Alei, the Rabbi Yochanan. We have a braita that supports Rabbi Yochanan. It's a very long braita, but in the end, we'll get to the fact that it's supportive of Rabbi Yochanan's contention. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the Pasuk says, with regards to the Korban Ha'ola, Zo Torat Ha'ola, Hi Ha'ola L'Muktam Mizbeach Kol Ha'Laida. And we learn from that two things. One is the fact that things that go up on the Mizbeach, Shimalu Le'erdu, because it says over there, Ala Mokta, Mishitale, Tukad. Once it goes up in the Mizbeach, it should remain on the pyre, it should be consumed on the pyre. So from that we know that if things that are psulim go on the Mizbeach, they don't come off the Mizbeach. But there is a limitation to that, and that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here. It says, Zot Torat Ha'ula, Hi Ha'ula, Hari Elu Gimel Mi'utim. There are three mi'utim here. Zot, or Ze, is always a mi'ut in the Torah. It also says, Hi, which is a form of mi'ut. Then it says, ha-ola, the hey, the extra hey there, the ola, also is a miut. So those three miutim come to tell me that even though in general things that go on the Mizbeach don't come down, there are certain items that do go on the Mizbeach, that do come off the Mizbeach, and that is prat, l'nishchata b'layla, something that was shechted at night is disqualified from the Mizbeach, so much so that if it goes on the Mizbeach, it's taken off the Mizbeach, nishbach dama, and if the blood was spilled, meaning that this is even if the blood was captured inside of a kli before it was spilled, it's still disqualified. Or dam that left the area of the azara before it was put on the mizbeach. Shemalta, if those three go on the mizbeach, teired, they will come off the mizbeach. Tosfot does raise the problem that Rabbi Yehuda does have a fourth thing that he excludes, and that is an ola that was nishkat b'darom, is also something imalu yerdu. And if he only has three miyutim from the psukim, how does he include that? So Tosfot says that either because kodshei kodoshim that are nishkat b'darom are called davara, and since it's called a davara, that is something that does not belong on the mizbeach, or that shchita in the darom is the equivalent in the world of kodashim as if you strangulated the animal rather than shechted it. And it's clear that if you strangulate an animal, you're not going to put it on the mizbeach. And so dovir shchita b'darom has that same status, and therefore imalu the mizbeach yerdu. In addition, Tosfot then adds on and says, what about all the other psulim that Rabbi Shimon mentions, including roveya and nirba, that also need to be excluded by Rabbi Yehuda, and he doesn't have a miyut for that. Says Yesh Lamar, the nishchata balayla, yatza dama, mima'eit tarvayu michad miyuta. Both of those can be excluded from a single miyut, the shkulim, they're the same problem. They're a problem that the dam is in the wrong place. Now, those are miyutim that are similar, that they are out of bounds, either in terms of time or in terms of place, and therefore they could be nitma'eit from a single miyut. Therefore Rabbi Yehuda will also have an additional miyut then available to exclude all the items that Rabbi Shimon excludes, including Roveya, Nirba, and all the other psulim that we will see. Tosafot over here discusses the sourcing and the reasoning behind Rabbi Yehuda's position over here, because as we're going to see, there are many other psulim. Why did Rabbi Yehuda pick these three psulim in particular to be the ones that have to come off the Mizbeach, whereas every other psul stays on the Mizbeach? So Tosafot here in the beginning says that in the Gemara in Zvachim, in Faresh, Taimeh, Amai Mode Rabbi Yehuda, Behanach, Delo Yerdu, Tvei, Mehani, Gimel. Why is it that Rabbi Yehuda agrees with all the other instances that they stay on the Mizbeach except more these three? What is unique about these three? Tosfot says that in order to be Machshir something, you have to come two steps in attaining that comparison to tell you that it's Kasher, then we won't invoke that to make it Kasher, as opposed to an item where if you just compare it to one thing that is differentiated, that it would make it Kasher. So for instance, the bama, certain of these items are permissible on a bama. So since they're permissible on a bama, then once they go up in the mizbeach, they don't come up. So Tosfot points out, that's only true if the item itself on the bama would have been kasher. Therefore, when it's put on the mizbeach, it's kasher. But if you need two steps for that, that's what he says here, okay, yesh lamar, the psul dam, lo yofino mei murim, shiksherim lechatchila kol halayla. We don't learn dam from mei murim that are kasher all night, mishum deika tarte. You need two limudim to do that. Chada davi dam mi basar. You have to learn dam from basar. And then davi psul mechshero. And they have to learn something that's psul from something that's normally kasher. So those two steps in the limud make it that you don't learn the din of psul dam from a murim. And similarly, by dam, we don't learn it out of a bama. Because there you also need two limudim. Pnei mechutz. You're learning out something in the mikdash from something outside the mikdash. Psul mechshero. And you're learning out something that's psul from something that's mechsher. And so once again there, you can't make a double limud. The Tosfot gives reasons as to why these particular items are not included, whereas other items are included. And that's based on the Gemara that we saw in Zvachim, where the Rishonim spend much more time trying to explain this position of Rabbi Yehuda. Tosfot does ask, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the Shitato, where we see in the Gemara and other places, he believes that the Ritzpat Azara was Nitkadesh, to be used like the Mizbeach, since the time of Shlomo, where he used the floor of the Azara to handle the volume of korbanot that were coming in during the Chanukah Tabayit. Therefore, the Ritzpat Azara has a din of Kedushat Mizbeach. If that's the case, then according to the Baalei Tosafot, how do you ever have a scenario where Imalu, Lo Yerdu, because everything is already on the Mizbeach, because it's already in the Ritzpat Azara. So Tosafot answers that there are scenarios where it's not on the Ritzpat Azara, where there's some sort of hefsek between the animal and the Ritzpat Azara. Never only if it ended up in the Mizbeach, would it be Lo Yerdu. Although, according to Rashi Shita, where he believes that Rabbi Yehuda only believes that the area between the Mizbeach and the Ulam was Nitkadesh, then obviously the rest of the Azarah does not have that Kedusha, and then there wouldn't be any question, because most of the Behemot are found in the areas of the Azarah that are not Bein Ulam and Mizbeach, and therefore, it only would be true that Imalu and the Mizbeach lo yirdu, not simply because they're found in the Azarah. And Rabbi Shimon Omer, Rabbi Shimon has a different differentiated view from Rabbi Yehuda. Ola, in the yellow ola. When it says in the pasuk ola, means that the ola goes on the mizbeach. So I know that is kshera. Minayin l'rabo shenishchata b'layla. Shenishpach dama. Shiyatza dama chutz l'klayim. How do I know to include the three items that Rabbi Yehuda excluded? And then beyond that, valan, things that were past their expiry time. Vayutze, things that left the azara or their klayim. Vatamei, or things that are tmeim. Vanotar, or things that were left past their time. The difference between lan and notar is that notar is by the basar, that's left past its expiry, whereas lan is by the dam, or the emurim, that are supposed to go on the mizbeach. Whereas Tosafot believes that lan is a reference to the dam, notar is a reference to the emurim, and basar is not included here at all in the braita, because imala, tered, if it goes on the mizbeach, it has to come off, because there's a isur lav, that anything that does not belong the ishim, is bebal taktiru. Anything that has a portion of the animal that ends up on the mizbeach, and in itself is not supposed to go on the mizbeach, there's a lav of bal taktiru. And therefore you'd have to take off the basar, and the basar would not be something that imala lo tered. Binishikat chutz lizmano, if you have makshevet pigol, or chutz limkomo, or makshava of chutz limkomo, vishikibelu plus psulim vizarku et daman, or that the dam was nitkabel ayidei psulim, and they did the zrikat adam, or damim that are supposed to go on the upper half of the mizbeach that were put on the lower half of the mizbeach, or dam that was supposed to be put on the lower half of the mizbeach, or is put on the upper half of the mizbeach, or dam that was supposed to go on the mizbeach yitzon that you took to the mizbeach zahab or the parochet or somewhere eheichal, those no dam that were supposed to be done eheichal, that you put them on the mizbeach yitzon, v'pesav achatat, which we know from the beginning of Tzvachim, are the two korbanot that require lishma, sheshaftan shalol lishman. If you did them, you processed them, shalol lishman, in those cases, minayin, they went up in the mizbech, lo tered, tamalomar, zot torah taula, ribat torah achat lechol haolim. There is a single torah, there is a single rule that governs anything that goes up. Shimalo, lo yerdu, that if they go up, they don't come down, just like the olah, if it goes up, it doesn't come down. So to anything else that goes up, has a Torah achat, has the same rule, that it doesn't come back down. You would think that that would include other types of psulim, that if they ended up in the mizbeach, you don't take them off, including an animal that had bestiality performed with it. Or something that was designated for takrovet avodah zara, or an animal that was worshipped for avodah zara, or an animal that was exchanged as the wages for the for sleeping with a harlot, v'amechir, or it was exchanged, bartered for a kelev, for a dog, v'kalayim, if it's a mixed breed, v'atreifa, or it has a psul in it, a problem in it that makes it a treifa, v'yotzei dolphin, or something that was a cesarean section. How do I know any of those that they end up in the mizbeach terdu? Tamalomar zot. It says zot, which is a miut. Only these items, but not other items. And even though, ironically, Rabbi Yehuda requires three miutim, a miut for each one of the items that he excludes, and on the other hand, Rabbi Shimon only requires one miut for all of the items, the 17 different items that he excludes, that is because Rabbi Shimon views all the things that are rejected as being of an equal form or an equal reason to reject them, and therefore, since you don't have a reason to learn one more than the other, they could all be rejected or excluded by a single miut. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda, whose miutim revolve around a particular issue with these items, it's these unique items that are excluded and not something that is a common denominator between all items that are psulim. Therefore, each one of them needs a separate miut to exclude it. Umara ita l'rabot adelu otziyatelu. How do you know what to include and what to exclude? You have a riboy of Torah achat kol ha'olim. That's the riboy, and then the miut is zot. So how do I know what to include that goes up will stay on the mizbeach? And then what is excluded by the miut, that if it goes up, it has to come down. So, achar, shiriba kaduv, v'mi'et. Since the pasuk gives you both a ribui and a miut, amart. You would say, and Rashi over here says, yesh lelech achar omer adat. You have to use some sort of logic. You have to use some sort of reasonable way to divide it up. And therefore, this is the reasonable assumption that I am. Merabeh ani et elu shayab psulan bakodesh. I include things that had a psul b'kodesh, Whereas Motziani et elu sheloi psulan b'kodesh, exclude those items that did not have psul b'kodesh. Rashi over here explains what is psulan b'kodesh or psulan shelo b'kodesh. Says psulan b'kodesh is lachar shebaul azara ira psulan. After they came to the azara, that's when the psul happened. The psul did not happen prior coming to the azara, but rather before coming to the azara. If it happened only after coming to the azara, then that's psulo b'kodesh. Whereas if it happened before it came to the azara, that's not psulo b'kodesh. And an example of that would be bestiality happened before they ever brought the animal. Kilayim happened before the animal came in. Whereas things like pigol, notar, tamei all happen once they've already been brought to the azara. The Baalei Tosafot in Zvachim question Rashi's distinction and say, what happens if the bestiality was performed in the azara? Is that considered to be psulo b'kodesh according to Rashi? Therefore, the Baalei Tosafot here and in Zvachim offer an alternative definition, and that is ein psulam yechol liot ad she'achar shehukdash. The difference is whether the psul happens only after they are kodesh, or is the psul a problem even before they are kodesh. So things like pigul, notar, tamei, lan are only relevant to items that are hukdash, only things that become kodesh. Before they're kodesh, there's no din of lan, there's no din of pigul, notar, v'tamei. As opposed to Roveya, Nirba, Muksa, Etnan, all of those disqualifications, they could take place before the animal is ever Kodesh. Those are disqualifiers in the animal inherently that can take place irrespective of whether it's Kodesh or not. That's why they are not considered to be Psulo B'Kodesh. That's the way that the Tosafot explains the distinction over here of Psulo B'Kodesh. Here, Tosafot brings another possibility, which near the phrase, Tehecha Tiyotzi Bo Kasher B'Makom Echer, Kari psulo b'kodesh. It also gives another definition, which is something that could be kasher in another instance, meaning that there are manifestations of this where it is okay, then that's considered to be psulo b'kodesh. If the disqualifier is a complete disqualifier, and if there is no situation in which it is mutar, then that is considered to be ein psulo b'kodesh. Now, that's the end of the braita. Now, finally, we get to the support that the braita brought to Rabbi Yochanan, which is ketani miyat. Yotzei Dofen, one of the things mentioned in this Braita, under the position of Rabbi Shimon, that is disqualified from the Mizbeach, meaning that if it was put on the Mizbeach, it's so disqualified that you have to take it off, which Yotzei Dofen was a C-section delo. My love, Yotzei Dofen de Kodoshim. It sounds like this is a Yotzei Dofen of Kodoshim, and therefore, if it's a Yotzei Dofen of Kodoshim, then it's pretty clear that Rabbi Shimon believes, despite the fact that he believes that a C-section is considered a leida by a human being, over here by Kodoshim, he does not consider it to be a valid leida for Kodoshim. Alright, we're going to stop here, four lines down on the top of Mem Aleph Amud Aleph. Obviously the Gemara is going to continue and challenge whether that's really what the Yotzei Dofen was mentioned in the Braita, and whether it really is supportive of Rabbi Yochanan.